Blog Talk Radio.
Three-minute warning.
NFL, baby!
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be a be radical. The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Come on, go, go, go!
Be a fit. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You have a little popcorn?
You know what being down by 20 at halftime means? Sweet, diddly, jack, squat! Why? Because you can storm back. I know it, you know it. They tucked into their little beds tonight. They don't want to be haunted by you crossing that goal line. But it's time to give them a nightmare. And cross it!
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Candid Frank, the CFL is the best football in the world show. I'm Frank, the true double blue Argo lifer Stanishi and the host of the show. Please welcome our co-hosts and friends of the show, Mike, the CFL is the best football in the world Townsend, and future owner Manasseh, harder to find than Waldo Giver Medine. Christopher, let's talk CFL and Lions Den Jones. Kelly, CFL know-it-all Bale. Bruce, the 13th man John Inch. Aaron, enough with the posting Macintosh. Gary, is it rock season yet, Groob? Stevie, the what else can I buy in Argo colors Richardson. Rob, the pistol J. Emery. Storm takes no Schmidt. Bill and Liam, the world travelers, and how? Serge, the CFL season ticket hoarder and collector, Duvidien. Derek, the bomber boot, Christopher. Kevin, Cheryl, and Cuddly Clan Kingsley. Kim, watch out, boys, Weaver. Debbie Riders, rule regardless, Wormsbecker. Donna, I will admin ya, Gale. Aaron William, the meathead freelance. Jarrett, the roadie, and box J Boy Harris. Leanne, Leafs girl, what am I doing here, hockey? Steve, rock and roll Myers. Mike, Keeble Cable Cancellera. Reddit, retweet the show CFL every time. Aaron Russell, the organizer Nagy. Doug, look at the big lens and say cheese Lewis. Joe, I'm a like a to listen to the show Sardella. Danny E, likes caring for elderly. Salonen. Spike, I will nail you, Sutherland. Andrew, the graphic illustrator, Crump. Frank, the mascot, Kirby. Tony, I wish I could agree with you, Frank Dejeuner. Becca, I will deadlift you, Veludo. Tangerine, I have a dream queen. Annette and Paul, that's my beautiful son, Jason Pottinger. And finally, Randy, Captain Video Christinger.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders,
and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay! Woo. Go Frank! Go Frank! Go Frank! Go Frank!
Okay, I will. I will go. I will go now. Sometimes you go to a football game, and there are expectations. Sometimes you go and there aren't expectations. There are surprises. Let's review what happened this week on the fantastic, the incredible Labor Day weekend of football that the Canadian Football League serves up. Let's start. It all started, of course, in Montreal, so we'll start there. And the Owls beat the RBs 20-10, and that's RBs. That's R, the letter R, and the letter B, otherwise known as the Red Blacks. They're losing ground, the Red Blacks, in the playoff hunt, you know, with how difficult it is to win in the East. You know, a one or a two or a three-game lead may be insurmountable for Eastern Division teams to overcome the opposition in their division, because this is going to be the year where a Western team is going to cross over. And many in the West feel that is going to be a blessing, not in disguise, but it's a blessing they're all praying for, and that is to play against the Eastern second-place team in their home. And that would be, you know, whether it be Toronto, Montreal, Hamilton, or, in fact, the Ottawa Red Blacks, if they turn things around. So this game was very important to the Red Blacks, and, you know, they're an expansion team in a year when a whole division looks like expansion teams. And it's kind of Does it bother me? Yeah, absolutely, because I root for one of the teams in that division known as the Argos. And it is kind of sad that there is that kind of imbalance. There is some talk about, you know, let's line up all the teams and just let the, you know, the best six teams make the playoffs, regardless of which, you know, province they're in or which side of the country they're on. Anyway, so Montreal has basically, with a victory, thrown their hat into the ring of the playoffs in the Eastern Division. And their defense, as usual, spot on, incredible, awesome, and effective. And they made Ottawa's offense, and Burris, who now is starting to hear a lot of jeers and a lot of boos, and a lot of the fans in Ottawa, my goodness, have turned on him. And I think it's more about the fact that the expectations were driven up by people like me, and people unlike me, people like neither me and them. Everyone felt, for the most part, we all felt that Ottawa should have been one of the better expansion teams. But I guess we were comparing them to the rest of the East, not realizing how slow the East was going to start. But trust me when I say this, things are going to change a little bit. A couple of teams in the East will turn things around. That's a guarantee. That's a lock. You can take it from me. I've been wrong before, but this might not be the time I'm wrong. In Regina, next up, Riders 35, the Bombers 30. Late drive by the Riders, put them in the win column again. You have to say, they just keep motoring, like the song says, you know. How many number one running backs do they have now? Six? I'm just wondering, you know. Argos could use a running back that can break for a 25, 30-yard run. I'm happy with Steele. Steele's a great player, special teams and all that kind of stuff. But you notice how some teams just don't have a running attack. And today, Hamilton didn't either. So this Saskatchewan team has an incredible amount of talent on their team. One wonders what kind of, I don't know, bending and twisting and number crunching they have to do to stay on the correct side of the cap. Regardless, great team. Frustrating, of course, the Winnipeg Blue Bomber fans who are really getting beside themselves because, quite frankly, they had a great start to this season, and if they keep playing Saskatchewan, it's going to become an ordinary season real quick. But they're full value, Winnipeg, for their record. They're a great team. Just they were beaten by a better team on Labor Day. Now, in Hamilton, at the shiny new unfinished Tim Hortons Field, the Cats clawed the Argos to the tune of 13-12, more like an Edmonton Oilers score. This was the game that could not keep up with the drama of the stadium question. Would we be there? Where would we be? Will we be there Tuesday? Both teams had difficulty shooting straight. For a second, Caleros did, touchdown, Bakari Grant, and basically they rode those points throughout. And, you know, I don't know. I think the victory really today was all about which team made one less mistake. And I think Hamilton simply did that. They made one less mistake. And that took them, you know, to their first victory in their beautiful new stadium, which I was at. And that's why I know so much about this game, because I sucked it all in. And as an Argo fan, that's what we do. We suck it right in. Swayze Waters was incredible. This kid is getting better and better. And when I say that the fans in the stands were going, ooh, they were, and I'm not talking about me or Argo fans. I think even the Hamilton Tiger Cat fans were amazed at how well he was kicking today, considering he was kicking with and against the wind. And he hit a couple of coffin corners, which were incredible, inside the one-yard line. Now, guys and gals, if you can get it inside the five, that's incredible. And this kid was doing amazing things. And today, actually, he was color coordinated as usual. Well, when they wear these new signature uniforms, he's been wearing these light blue shoes, which go really well with their uniforms. Peacock blue, if you use Laurentian pencil crayons. I one look at Milanovic, and he walked over to the water bottle that was on, I guess, his water bottle, and he grabbed it. And I thought it was a throat, and he was squeezing the life out of it. My goodness, I think I'll go to practice this week because it is going to be interesting. Things are not going to be pleasant at York University. How many more players can the boatmen jettison? They've rebuilt the team, and they're rebuilding it again during the season. Is an Argo fan like me concerned? Absolutely. Why wouldn't I be? Hopefully they'll turn things around. I have faith in their management team. But I got to tell you, just like the rest of you that are fans of teams, our patience isn't as strong as management. Just ask Winnipeg. Just ask Ottawa and Burris. It's like that. So Zach Collaros under the center, considering he hadn't played in six games, pretty effective. The story of the day, other than Swayze Waters and Zach Collaros, of course, has to be the fact that Ricky Ray needed, I think, 90 yards, and he got that. And he is now the sixth player to reach 50,000 yards in the shortest amount of time. 12 seasons, I think, is what he's been around. Ricky did not look good today. And I think if you ask Ricky, he'll tell you that. There were a couple of times where he threw mostly in desperation, and it didn't work out for him. Now, in Calgary, I wasn't there, but I'm sure there's going to be somebody on the phone here who will be able to tell us chapter and verse why Calgary is better than the Eskimos. And the biggest problem for the Eskimos were the tandem of John Cornish and Bo Levi Mitchell. Adarius Bowman, as usual this season, he's been fantastic. One of the better receivers in the league this year. But the Esk's defense has to figure out how to slow down Mitchell. And that may be the key. That will be the key. Okay, I sneezed. Bless me. It's called the cough switch, but you can sneeze too when you use the cough switch. So Adarius Bowman, incredible. And I almost made it to the very end before I sneezed. BC enjoyed the weekend off. You know, they're single. They had no partner. Got to feel sorry for them a little bit, you know. There's nobody that, well, they have a hate on for everybody. You know, they just spread it around a little more than the other teams. Everybody else has a partner they like to kick ass, you know. But British Columbia, just, they'll, BC, Vancouver, they'll just kick any ass. That's all they want to do. And this week, they'll be coming back to do just that. And we'll talk about that on Wednesday. That is the future games tonight. We talk about what happened on Labor Day weekend. Now, let's not forget, and I want to say this for all the wonderful people outside of the football teams, outside of management of the football teams, the fans themselves. Now, I went to the Hamilton game, so I got to see what Hamilton does on Labor Day. Is it what happens every week? Well, if I listen to Jared Harris, it's true, it happens every week. But what I got to say about this is that I am amazed at CFL fans and how they turn an afternoon of football into a damn great party. And it was uneventful for the police, which to me is the first priority, where people behave in a manner that's civilized and try to keep the place as clean as possible. That's something Jared and I agree on. And the people were well-behaved. The Argos suck. Oh, yeah, shut up, Ticats. That all happens. That all happened, and that will continue to happen, and that's okay because it's all, for the most part, for many, it's in fun. And for the ones that it isn't in fun, there's usually enough people between them and who they're going after. So usually it works out okay, and they stay at a distance. One thing I got to say about the fans, that they get, in every seat, in every cup holder in the seat today, there was a souvenir football, of which I think about 70% ended up back on the field the first time the Argos screwed up. And that became interesting. It always amazes me that organizations, teams,
offer projectiles to the fans. Good thing they don't give away free beer. Wait a second. I don't think they, well, they'd only throw the empty cans. They wouldn't throw with the beer in it. Most of them wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. Not your obvious Canadians anyway. So that's what happened from my perspective. We'll see who's on the dais tonight, and I know that it's going to be fun regardless, because there's going to be a lot of "I told you so," "I told you so," and "I told you so." All right, let's start with the mouth from Hicksville in Saskatchewan, Kelly Bale. How's it going, buddy?
Very well, thanks. How about you, Frank? My condolences.
Oh, you don't have to give me any condolences. It was a horrible game for us. It had its moments. It had great moments. But for the most part, it was a football game. And I kind of, if I was to say anything negative about the game, it was probably one of the worst games I've seen in a long time in as far as being professional. These were two teams who played like very unprofessional teams. Unable to catch easy balls, unable to hold on to the ball. It was a pathetic excuse for a football game. I was totally disappointed. But this might be the fact that the Argos lost talking more than the game. But I don't know, what did it look like to you? Did it look like one of the better CFL games to you?
It was, really. I mean, it was a defensive battle, but I thought there was a lot less sloppy play in this one than some of the others that we've seen this year, and I think both teams are on the up, really. I was just waiting for the Argonauts to get it done, and they just couldn't put it together today, but I don't think that's a symptom of anything serious. I think they'll get it together next week.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't think it was a defensive battle. I think it was an offensive battle, and each team were taking turns offending their fans. it was not very good. It wasn't. And you know what? If it wasn't for Swayze Waters and the fact that that Caleros was back and Ricky Ray, think about it for a second. It was such a boring game. Really, it was such a boring game. There was no excitement about those three things. It's like I got the distinct impression as soon as the game was over, everybody was forgetting about what happened. Nobody was talking about anything that was really exciting, And unfortunately, when the kicker's the most exciting player on the field, it doesn't leave the fans with much to cheer about. But I love Swayze Waters, and I think the world of him. And I am totally proud of the job that he did. He was just incredible. And the booming kicks, the most reaction, from the fans in the stands was when he, honest reaction just for a good play, was his kicks. People were amazed by how hard and how high and how accurate he was today. He was incredible.
He was great.
All right, next up we've got... we have to put up with this guy, don't we? Yeah, I think we do. Bruce John Inch, the 13th man.
I told you so. Argos suck.
Well, hey, listen, for most of the game, so did Hamilton.
You fell into that one. Hey, man, main thing is to win. Don't matter if you win by one or you win by 40.
Yeah, no, it was an okay game, but I really wasn't impressed with either of the offenses. They were not... impressive.
Don't you think those Hamilton fans were loud, man?
What?
Don't you think? That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
They were fantastic.
We had a great time, man. We had a great time. We ran into some old Argo buddy friends, and we had a great time, man. Like you said, we went to the tailgate. Did you get over to the tailgating?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure enough,
It was just great, Frank, to have it back in Hamilton, No more trips down Highway Number 6. It's in our own backyard. This is our turf, It was like Christmas, man. It's hard to explain, but I had goosebumps, man. It was just unbelievable. Getting closer and closer to that gate opening. We were there for gate opening. I was maybe the 10th, 15th person in. But we had an unbelievable time, man. I had like 3 hours sleep last night. I was up every half hour, especially after we heard it was going to... we didn't get word officially until 9:32 last night it was an official goal. So Christmas was on. It was good. I think it wouldn't have been great, but it would have been good even if we lost. You know, just to be back home, to see these fans getting pumped up, being behind their team no matter what, you know, we were going in there 1-6, you know, and it was awesome.
I feel so fortunate, because how often does one get to be at the opening of a brand new stadium?
Exactly, and you know what, I missed the closing of Ivor Wynn. Because I had a family death and I had to go to a funeral, but I was there for the opening of this. And like you said, you remember this the rest of your life. Like, you went to Ottawa's, you remember that the rest
of
your life.
Yep, I've done both, and this year both were Argo losses, and by a point. And the excitement. And the excitement for the fans as a visitor, I enjoyed that. Like that, you can't help but enjoy the excitement of the fans when things are going their way. You know what I mean? It isn't as exciting for.
It was a close game. You know?
Oh yeah. And it was very close. And I really believe it was the game where the team that made the one less
the fewest mistake. That's right. You hit the nail on the head, though.
In that way, it was horrible. But you know. It was the excitement of the new stadium, you know, the excitement of Claros back.
My favorite moment in that whole game was after Bakuri Grant got that touchdown. He got that ball, and he walked it over to the owner, Bob Young, and he handed it to Bob Young, and he said, this is for your brother, man. You know, because you know his brother, when he passed, that's why Bob kind of bought the team, was to honor his brother. And, that was so nice of Bakuri Grant to do that, you know. There was no thinking about it. He grabbed that football and he walked it right over to him.
Good for him.
That was, you know.
The right
that's
thing
why
is
we
the
have the best,
thing to
the
do.
Best players, you know.
Yeah, the right thing is the easiest thing to do. People don't understand that.
No, exactly. It's very easy. A thoughtless thing, but you know, people will remember that. You know. Not a thoughtless thing. What's my wording on that? It's like a...
automatic.
Exactly. Automatic to him. You know, there was no second guessing, you know.
Just second nature.
Yeah. But I'll give you one thing about you, Swayze Waters, man. When you said people were going, ooh, we were going ooh too, man. That was phenomenal. I know he was kicking into the wind, but he kicked, that 70-yard punt?
Jeez.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
I couldn't believe that, man.
His leg was right on, and that's another irritation. That's another irritation I had as an Argo fan, because this guy was, you know, kicking the laces off the ball, you know, and they didn't take advantage. They let you guys off the hook so many times. It was ridiculous.
You got that Argo bounce once and went right out on the 2-yard line. It was like, holy cow.
No, it was inside the one.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Then they had to pull it out to the one. It was amazing. Yeah, just a fantastic job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you get a chance to watch the Hamilton-Toronto game?
Yeah, I watched about three quarters
minutes?
Plus a couple minutes. But, I went to the bar there, or lounge, whatever you call it, to get ready for the Sams game. But, yeah, it was good, but it wasn't. It was... I just thought, you know, with the new stadium and stuff like that, you know, Hamilton would come out, and even though I picked Toronto to win, but, you know, they'd come out, and on TV it didn't sound like they were that loud in Hamilton, but that's just my opinion.
The crowd was loud. One of the problems TV had is, that was one of the problems they had about they fought tooth and nail to be able to broadcast that game from Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing it, you know, with electrical tape. You know, the facilities for broadcasting the game are not complete. There's a lot left to be done. TSN did the best they could. Thank goodness it was Brown and not Cuthbert, because then we would have ruined a great opportunity for a great broadcast.
It looked good on TV. I taped the game and I watched it when I got home, and good clarity and all that. It's not like, you know, I think the Mac games were worse. Were poorly because of the cameras, but, you know, like
well,
you
the
said,
cameras
much,
are the same. The problem is locations and then, you know, and
well,
being able.
Well, that's what I meant. But I don't think they had as many cameras at Mac that they did.
And the hardware.
And they didn't start setting up last night until 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know,
that's when
we kind of knew it was going to happen because TSN came in and they were setting up at 5. So.
There you go.
You know.
But I'm just disappointed with Ricky Ray because, you know, that's just, it's just not like him. He should be better, he can be better, and he has to be better. And, of course,
and
you could say, Frank, that, you know, he doesn't have the receivers back and blah, 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 blah sort of thing. But you know what? Like I said so many times before, if you're not gonna play this game, then we'll cut you, plain and simple. But
well, unfortunately, they can't keep cutting people.
So
eventually, they got
to
keep people.
They
can't keep finding new guys. They can't keep finding new guys. And today there were Adams. Look, was it Adams? Am I thinking Adams? There was one route where the Argo receiver, and I think it was Adams. He stopped running. And the ball went over his head.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of stuff that frustrates, you know.
But that
happens
with every team. I mean, even with Calgary today, that
But I guess, you're saying, you know, Ray. Well, unfortunately, Ray can only throw the ball. He can't catch it. Is he playing you know, the guy that he's been over the years? No. He's throwing a little more. He was a little more desperate today. He threw one a Hail Mary up that we're lucky it wasn't intercepted.
Mm-hmm.
It hit the Argo in the hands, and he didn't catch it. You know, sometimes, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm not a football player, and I don't understand what's so difficult about catching a ball. But it seems so often they can't catch it when the ball's in their hands. It's like they got to let it hit their chest, and if they have to reach just with their hands in front of them. It almost seems like it's easier for them to catch a ball with their hands over their head looking back than it is looking at the quarterback. I don't know why.
Well, yeah, one-handed catch or something, spectacular catch or something like that, and it's like, oh, my God, this is going to be on the top 10 CFL, TSN plays of the week, blah, 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 or year or whatever sort of thing. But then when it hits them in the numbers, they can't catch it. Because they're looking ahead to see where they're going before they catch the ball.
Yeah, and that's probably
yeah,
that, right there.
That was the same as Nick Moore yesterday in the Saskatchewan game. He made a couple highlight reel catches, and then he missed a couple regular-looking catches.
Yeah, Tykes missed a few today, too, though, man.
Yeah.
You know, I count three that we could have had in from ages. But, you know.
Yeah,
look at the Edmonton guy. Could have had a touchdown there, and it hit him right off his numbers.
Yeah.
I don't remember who that was, but, I mean, it hit him right in the numbers, and they just...
Yeah, Trevor Guyton.
Yeah,
also, tonight we have... I think that was Manasse, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yes, sir. Bruce, man, congrats,
man.
That was an epic game this morning.
Thank you so much, man. We are so happy being Ticap fans. I can wake up tomorrow morning and walk down the street and not get chirped at.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great feeling, man, you know. And it's an even better feeling that we did it again to the Argos, you know. So we got two birds with one stone.
Definitely.
Yeah, but thank you
what
so much,
what did you think, Manasse?
No, I mean, I was just the event was great to see for the Ticap fans, the new stadium, and all the excitement. The game, like you said, Frank, I thought it kind of sucks. I don't know. Toronto didn't show up. I think that's what it was.
Well, Hamilton didn't show up hardly at all either. You know, it wasn't an offense. Like there was no offense to speak of in the game.
Yeah.
I don't care about the numbers.
The players weren't that fired up. You could tell. Like, I don't know if you guys saw in the beginning. Because on TV they had that thing where they showed the Ticap fans coming out onto the field and they came out the tunnel, and most of them didn't even look excited. Like, it was maybe one or two guys you even saw that looked that fired up. Everybody else was just sort of lackadaisical, didn't really, neither team looked like they cared. It's not like the Labor Day Classics in the past where you saw the teams.
Because their fans are pissed off because they had 16 hours notice to, okay, now you can come to the game.
Yeah, I think plus that they had the upper deck on the west side was totally cut off. So it looked weird having, you know, the big section of the stadium.
Open the stadium when it's completely done. That's the way I look at it for any team in the CFL, including myself.
I disagree. After being there today, mm-hmm. It didn't matter. It wasn't the fans. It was the players. The players, like Manasseh said, I mean, the Tie Cats were coming out of the tunnel like people, where am I? Where am I? Stopping.
Yeah, really.
Around. You know? They were stopping.
Oh,
I've never seen it before. I've never seen a football player run through a tunnel and stop and look around. Wow,
right.
Cool. They were admiring the stadium,
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know if you ever guys seen like the Rough Riders when they do their whole bring them out thing and the guys come charging out. Like they come just storming out, going crazy. And then when you saw Hamilton's, when I saw that, I knew right then and there, I was like, oh, this is going to be a low scoring, boring game because you could tell there was no excitement whatsoever on their part. It didn't even feel like a rivalry game. It just felt like just another regular season game. They could have been playing the BC Lions for all that mattered. Look, that's what it felt like.
Not that I don't agree, Manasseh, but just to play the devil's advocate, Kolaros had a fairly decent first half numbers-wise. I think he threw for 180 and had a touchdown pass and no interceptions, and they had a decent rushing total for a half. I think it was over 50, so, you know, there was offense. Hamilton in the first half, but it seems the Argos really battened down the hatches in the second half, and you know, I turned the game back on in the fourth quarter, and it was still 13-12.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I fell asleep in the second half, man. It was hard to watch. It was pretty rough. Even the Calgary-Edmonton game stunk, too. The second half of that thing was awful.
No.
Let's finish with Toronto and Hamilton. So, did you think Swayze Water's kicks were as impressive on TV as it seemed in person?
Oh, yeah, it was incredible. I mean, it's sad, though, that's the highlight of the game, the kicker.
And that's my
point. Tells you just how bad of a game it was. But, I know, I heard you say that earlier,
feeling.
But... it's unreal. You know? But anyways, all that aside, we got to be happy for Bruce. The Ticat fans deserve it. Just after, you know, all the BS they put up through the last 2 years, you know, I'm just happy for them. They finally get out in their stadium and going forward. We all know Hamilton's going to end up number one in the East. It's going to happen. And hopefully they're going to host the East Final. And the stadium should be ready by then, and it'll be amazing. So, all's well in Tiger Town.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, it was fun. It was a great experience, and I'm glad they're finally home. I had the chance to go to Guelph, so I have a real good idea how much that sucked. And not because of Guelph, not because of anything like that. But let's face it. I mean, I know that the CFL isn't the NFL. I know we don't have 100,000 fans at the stadium, but we need more than six, you know, to make it exciting, you know, and also the team themselves. You know, things are starting to go their way now. You know, now they've got their stadium. Their injured quarterback is back, and they're gonna be challenging for first without a doubt. Without a doubt, they'll be challenging for first.
And we get more practice time on the field too, because now we don't have to drive 45 minutes to a stadium to all suit it up already. You know, we got our own locker room now.
There you go.
And that means the world, you know. To those guys, you see the locker room. I saw it from TV anyway. Point of view, it looks amazing.
Yeah,
amazing from what they had at Iberwind. You know, even the visitors were going to be happy. You don't know what you know. Frank could probably tell you what the visitors' locker room looked at like at Iberwind. Man, it was like four walls, and that was it. Man, they shut off they'd shut off the hot water on people, and you know,
steel bars to hold your equipment.
It was. It was crazy.
was like a hockey rink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you know what, guys? Too though, the one of the main things in the CFL too is the tiebreaker, right? And I strongly believe in that. Is you know you have to get that tiebreaker because if you're tied at the end of the season, who gets it?
Mm-hmm.
That has a lot.
Huge.
many lots.
Well, except of course, if you're Calgary, because we all know, even if Calgary does end up with the number one seed, they're just going to lose the Riders as usual. So,
oh, come on.
Neither here nor
now.
There. I had to throw that in.
Those,
I'm sorry. You set it up on the tee. I had
come
to hit
on,
it.
Now.
CJ's not here, so Manasseh's picking up the mantle.
Well,
for,
where the hell is
for Calgary,
CJ?
Fast.
Where is he?
I don't know.
Bring
he's hiding.
Bring CJ on. I want to tell him
BC
who has
didn't
the
play. What does he
want to
talk about? What does he want to talk about? I don't know. I tried calling him, actually. Anyway, okay. Okay, so we slipped in to the Toronto-Hamilton game because we started talking. I figured, okay, we'll finish talking about them. Then we started to slip into talking about Calgary and Edmonton, the other game that happened today. And Calgary wins 28-13 over the Esks. Cornish, Bo Levi Mitchell, they carried the day for their team. Darius Bowman had another great game, but unfortunately it was in a loss. We'll start at the bottom. Oh, you know what? Mike was here. Let's finish him with the Argos and the Ticats. Mike Townsend.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
What up, Mikey? How
what's
are you,
up,
my friend? Good, good.
Not much, man. Just enjoy some of these games today, man. But really, I got to tell you, man, that Hamilton, I was glad for the Hamilton people, man, but that game kind of sucked, man, that third or fourth quarter. It was boring, dude.
Yeah. All good, though.
You know what it was like? It was like watching paint dry.
My highlight that I like, man, which the CFL is getting, like I told y'all, getting more popular by the weekends, man, like Chris Berman out there in Hamilton, man. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
And our homeboy.
That's something that is. Yeah, you know, if Berman comes out there to a CFL game.
John Saunders, he's a Toronto kid. Well, actually, a Hamilton kid.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, that's
Chris Carter was there,
man,
too.
You know, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Chris, he was there. So, you know, that's something when I'm coming from the States, man, to a CFL game to come up in the booth and talk about it, man. You know, believe me, if Berman was going to be there, it's going to be on SportsCenter tonight. You best believe it.
Man, but he picked the worst game of the week to come to, though.
Yeah, yeah, he really did.
If he went to Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, he would have saw what the CFL can look like when it's at its best. But, man, wow.
I agree with you on that one, man. And one thing I'm agree with you too, Manasseh, on that Edmonton Calgary game, man. That game was blowing it off, man.
Was it ever, man?
Well, there you go, Mike. You can start with the Edmonton-Calgary game. As I said, Calgary won 28-13. I don't know what's happening. You know, I'm beginning to think, and I don't know if this has anything to do with it, guys, is I think all those penalties early in the season have really taken the steam out of the inventiveness and the aggressiveness of the teams. And they're all it's almost as though they're given the precedence now before they go out, you know, because they got to be careful how tough they are. It almost seems that way to me because I can't explain the lack of energy.
Hey, Frank, you got some feedback on the line here, so I don't know if you're, like, double talking.
Me?
Yeah, one, no, it's the phone or somebody's line or something.
Okay, make sure, guys, you have the audio turned off. Yeah, I can hear it. I can hear it now. So, Mike, Edmonton, Calgary, okay, it wasn't a great game. But, you know, great defenses like Calgary has tend to turn a game into a bore fest, you know. And Edmonton had no answer for Bo Levi Mitchell.
No, man, they didn't have no answer for Bo Levi or Cornish, man. Cornish racked up some good yardage on them, you know. And like I said, man, I picked Calgary to win the game anyway. You know, and my thing is with Edmonton got Bowman, man, but, I mean, who else do they have to throw the ball to, really? They missed the guy at Stamps, bro, missing him back.
Yeah, or they need to put Riley in at running back.
They need to do something. They need to get complimentary players, man, to help Bowman out, because Bowman's the number one guy, and if he gets hurt, which I hope he don't, then who are they going to have next? It's gonna be it'll be real scary. So,
well, like I said before, I told CJ that it's you know what, oh, BC and Saskatchewan have a better defense than Calgary. I'm like, are you on crack or what? Like, what are you talking about here? But you know what? Defense wins you games. And you know what?
Yes, it does.
Calgary did. And they are the best defense in the league, period.
Oh,
plain and simple.
Storm, please. You beat Edmonton. They didn't even have a quarterback. They had Matt Nichols and Pat White splitting.
Yeah, well, don't
carry.
If Riley was in there, well, you can't go back in the future and say, well, if Riley was there, well,
if Riley had been
happen,
in the game,
right?
The Eskimos would have won the game, dude.
No.
Did you see how many times Nichols threw these stupid passes? The guy was playing like an idiot out there, man. Don't even get me started. Your team got lucky.
Calgary's
doing something because Edmonton got no calls in the third and fourth quarter. There were three clear pass interferences where the referee standing right there didn't say a word. I couldn't believe it. They called holding
when Matt Nichols
had that 15-yard run to put him in field goal position in the middle of the third, and they called this phantom holding call, showed the replay, there wasn't even anything there. So don't give me, come on, man. Calgary is the most BS team in the CFL. They benefit either from luck or the refs every single game. And when they play the Riders, they're going to get exposed because the Riders are too strong in the trenches and they're going to dominate the Stamps. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. You'll see. Not now. Wait till you play Saskatchewan and you're going to be like, oh, my God, my team wasn't as good as I thought they were. You'll see. Don't worry.
Yeah, well, it'll be probably frickin' minus 30 by the time they play Saskatchewan on October 3rd.
And that's what's going to be the problem for you guys because then the Riders are just going to run the ball up and down
the Riders.
All day.
They could shove their pickles up their own, Schmidt.
Okay, look. Before you know, tone it down a little bit, Manasseh. Don't upset him. I mean, he's at 8-1, and apparently
winning
isn't enough.
No, I'm not against him. It's just that I was so mad the whole game that the refs were just so one-sided, man. It was unreal. I couldn't believe it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If I was an Edmonton fan, I would have been so ticked off.
Well, that's an opinion.
It was just
Schmidt,
the fact of the matter. I mean,
Storm, do you agree with the officiating was one-sided on Calgary's benefit to Calgary's benefit?
No.
Exactly. So, you know, that's all a conjecture. The important
that's
thing
not
is
conjecture. What are you talking about? Did you guys watch the game? What do you mean?
Look at all those
pass interference passes. The passes down the field, especially against Bowman, three times. He's getting really mugged by the defensive back, and the refs didn't throw a flag. Then they even challenged it, and the refs still said it wasn't pass interference. Come on, man. That's one sided.
Like I said on Facebook, there, like you freaking kiss the guy, you get a pass interference call. I mean. You know, like,
that's my
you know,
point.
Where
in every
stand?
Other game, that's what I'm saying. Every other game, minimal contact, it's always a call. This game, for whatever reason, Bowman can get tackled in midair before he touches the ball and there's a no flag. I don't understand how that's possible when the ref is five feet away from him.
What I don't understand by Calgary, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but Nick on the team, man. Is it because he's been there so long?
Nick
what
Lewis?
Story is it? You're having static there, so I didn't hear.
Yeah, Nick Lewis, man. What has he done? You know what I'm saying? I'm just wondering why he's still on the team.
Well,
oh, you know,
the
whole
I
leader
think
thing,
just sort
you
of
know,
trying to weed him out, I guess, in a way.
Because man, you can use that spot for a nice up and comer, man. That to help that team out, bro, for real.
Well,
and
a lot of people don't like him and stuff like that. Like when I went to the bar today, watching the Calgary Edmonton game. I mean, there was me and one other Stampeders fan there, and that was it. But you know what? I couldn't give a Schmidt who was there if it was just me by myself. But you know what? Everybody's like, oh, that Lewis is a piece of Schmidt, blah, 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 this and that. I'm like, you know what?
And I'm not saying that he's a piece of crap, man. I'm not saying that Nick Lewis was a gamer back in his heydays, man. But, you know, sometimes, I know Hufnagel, you know, he's dedicated to some of his players, man, but at a certain point, you know, that spot could be used for other
Yeah, well,
cover,
he's
man.
Going, he's going young. He's going younger, right? And sort of like Nick Lewis is on his last legs, even though he's probably got, I'd say, at least a couple to 4 years to go anyways. But I still love him. I mean, he's great.
I love Nick Lewis.
The bull horse.
That's rare for a Saskatchewan fan to say. But
at the same time, just know that I love him before I say this. He is on the downward spiral.
Yep.
There's no denying that he's coming to camp larger and larger every year. I mean, you can't feel sorry for the guy. He's working hard.
But Kelly, he can kick your butt.
I'm not. It's nothing personal against Nick. Like I said,
I understand. I understand.
Yeah,
he's just trying to say that he's trying out for a Santa Claus suit. The colors.
Mashing.
Santa
like
Claus
the same
is black
thing.
Now? Oh, my God. I didn't
That's
the same thing I said about Stamps in Edmonton, man. It's about time for them to do something with him, man. Really.
Well, you know.
I've been saying that I think he might be gone by the end of the season or during the season, and you just never know because they're just not playing him he's still hurting.
Well, let's leave it there. Let's leave it there and move on. Bruce John Inch, the game, Calgary.
Got your echo there, Frank. Though.
Yeah. It's one of the guys that's got his mind.
I got really no comment on that. To be honest, I didn't watch a single play on that game.
What?
How about you, Kelly?
No.
Good for you.
No.
That's a good thing.
Well, it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. Unlike a couple of the other games that I kind of nailed this week, that was one of the ones that I didn't. I thought Edmonton would have a better showing. I was disappointed with the second half performance of Matt Nichols. I thought he was better than that, and I thought he missed a lot of, opportunities. I don't know. Does anybody else see it that way?
Didn't you feel like he looked great in the second quarter, and then I guess you felt the same way I did, that he was going to keep that going, and
right.
It just disappeared.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that touchdown pass that should have been caught, that could have changed the whole game around, right?
True.
That killed him.
Overall.
It's not like the guy had a dive or anything. I mean, hit him right in his numbers.
Yeah, well, overall, I'd say that, I enjoyed watching the game, and it was a good way to spend my Labor Day afternoon. I just wish Edmonton had won.
Well, it didn't work out that way, and those are the first two games that were played that we're talking about. They were played today. And earlier this weekend, two other games were played. But we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk Ottawa Red Blacks, Montreal Alouettes, and Winnipeg, Saskatchewan.
Did you know in Canada we have no fair catch rule?
No fair catch?
No fair catch.
Holy mackerel.
Hopefully there's Ashman on the side with the medics.
Somebody's going to get hurt.
<I'll> be No fair catch? Injuries? I see some pain.
That could be kind of dangerous. I believe somebody would get killed like that.
You guys like it violent up there, huh?
CFL. We play by our own rules.
Why do you think it takes you guys four downs to get 10 yards? We only need three up there.
Because we always make mistakes.
We're just kind of slow, laid back. Got to get an extra down in before we can get our 10 yards.
They give us one just in case.
I love four downs. First down, second down, third down, fourth down.
You're saying you're better than us.
They want the game to go slower, I guess, for the commercials.
Y'all are obviously better. Must be the long winters, maybe.
They have longer legs. Are they faster? Is there, better gene pool?
In the CFL, the play clock is 20 seconds rather than 40.
20-second play clock. Quicker tempo.
Well, they better be a lot smarter men on the field then.
Yeah, man, the respiratory system needs to be in good shape.
That's pretty quick.
That doesn't sound very fair. It doesn't give them enough time. They barely have time to do it here.
God forbid there's a different defense.
Oh, boy, that's fast. I mean, you got to get it done.
I say 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I get them an extra 10 seconds.
20 seconds, that would keep things moving and grooving.
In the Canadian Football League, we have 12 guys instead of 11. What do you think, an extra man out there?
Of course. They all look good in their pants.
Ooh, can I take him home?
I think you can never have too many men in tight pants on a football field.
And we have unlimited motion in our backfield.
Wow.
You know?
It's a whole new realm of possibilities, huh?
And they're ready to go again in 20 seconds.
Where is this again?
That's interesting.
I may have to rest up a little. CFL, I got to watch it. Go Canada.
All right, so let's talk about the next games. And, of course, we'll start with the one that Manasseh doesn't want to talk about, the Ottawa-Montreal game. Why don't we start with Kelly Bale? Kelly, Montreal, Ottawa, the game better than the one between Toronto and Hamilton in the sense that it seemed like both teams, even though the score, the total points, 30 points, it was another one of those lack of offense games, and the East is suffering that big time, and Montreal and Ottawa are prime examples of why the East don't have offenses.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, these two teams are pathetic right now, and I don't see it changing into next week. I'm glad because we play Ottawa fairly soon, and we're going to catch them on this downswing, if it is a downswing at all. And, Montreal, they can only improve. News today, of course, is that Michael Sam is on their negotiation list and, you know, hasn't had any offers.
I thought he was on Calgary's negotiation list.
No, we're talking Michael Sam, the linebacker that was drafted this year. We're not talking about Josh Gordon, the wide receiver. Right. So Michael Sam, they could really use some help at that middle linebacker spot, obviously. It hasn't been solid.
I heard they were going to try and use him as a defensive tackle.
Possibly. I mean, Sam is kind of oversized for a linebacker. Maybe not height-wise, but weight-wise. I think he's about 235. So he could play D-line in the CFL, especially rush end. I mean, I wouldn't see him playing inside, run-stopping. But anyways, I just think Montreal is the better of the two teams. And if you remember correctly, I believe I picked the 10-point difference, but not the exact score. So I sense this coming, and wish Ottawa some better luck this year, really. I'm pretty good friends with Serge, too, so kind of feel bad for him with the club, but nice to see him get that W this week.
Yeah, it's well, anyway, let's move on to the next guy. I've said what I think. Bruce, did you get a chance to watch Montreal and Ottawa?
I did. I'm kind of glad Montreal won. They deserve a win. You know, the fans are diehards, just like us up here in Hammer. But I do feel sorry for Henry Burris, man. You know, it's just not clicking. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, but they got to do something, Ottawa, and they better do it fast. You know, I know it's their first season and all that, but, you know, half that team, if not more, is veterans. And there's got to be some change. But I like Montreal. I like the win. And we'll leave it at that.
Storm, how about you? Montreal, Ottawa, Montreal 20, Ottawa 10.
Well, I picked Ottawa, and that's my only loss of the weekly predictions. But it was sort of a half-ass, can I say ass on there? Okay, I can. It was a half-ass, like, good game, but it wasn't. It was, I feel like you said, I just feel bad for, I feel bad for Burris. But on the other hand, and this is one note I wanted to say here a couple weeks ago, but I forgot about it, but now it's coming back to me, so I'll say it. But anyways, it looks like Burris is, like, just blaming everything on everybody else but himself, right? And he never did that in Calgary. And which is strange to see him just, like, on camera saying that, and it's like, whoa, buddy, you know, you gotta take some blame for yourself, too, but... You know, I mean,
he doesn't attack the problem the same way Ricky Ray does.
Yeah, Ricky, but now he's getting really frustrated, though. He's really frustrated. But you know what? Everybody's got to click. Just, you know, and you could tell by the record and stuff like that, everybody's got to click, catch the ball, throw the ball, catch the ball. I mean, you know, like, it's going to happen. You're going to miss balls. You're going to overthrow a player, blah, 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 sort of thing. And, you know, same thing with Montreal, the quarterback that's on the 6-game injured list, even though he's not injured.
Troy Smith.
So, you know what? It wasn't a bad game to watch, but, you know, I do feel bad for Ottawa. I really do.
They've got to earn it.
They have to get touchdowns, plain and simple. You know, that's what wins you the games, right? So.
Yeah, and they don't have that combination right now.
Yeah, exactly. All I have to say about that.
Okay, Manasse, the Montreal Alouettes, would you say they're on the verge of doing something good? Because their offense, you know, was awful at the beginning of the year. They couldn't do anything right. Their offense is at least showing some sign of life. Would you agree with that? And is it because of the veteran quarterback?
Yeah, I think for those who knew Crompton and Edmonton, he showed a couple signs of being a decent quarterback. And I don't know. I think their issues go a little bit deeper as far as with their coaching staff, and they have all kind of problems there. So until they fix that, I don't think their team is going to get that much better.
In other words, the choir can sing really well if they're all singing from the same hymnal. And there's too many hymnals in Montreal.
I mean, don't you, I don't know if it's just me, or do you guys seem to notice that Tom Higgins sometimes looks lost on the sidelines? Like, he just looks confused.
He looked a lot like that Hamilton player that came out of, you know, he was looking around. This is nice. Where am I? Yeah, he looks lost sometimes. He really does look lost sometimes.
Yeah, but when he was in Calgary, he didn't look lost, though.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
because, you know, he's been out of it for a while, and maybe he just, you know, hasn't readjusted yet to coaching.
I don't know. Something's got to happen.
Well, maybe he doesn't have the players that, you know, when one coach, when a coach fails as miserably as Montreal had last year, and now it appears this coach is failing miserably. There's no way around it. The problem is the GM, and here's why I'm going to say it. It's real simple. There's two reasons why the team sucks. They don't have the players, or they don't have the coaching. Both are the responsibility of the GM. So, you know, you can't hide from that. He can't hide from bad coaching. He can't hide, you know, he got his off the hook, you know, with last year. But this year, you know, it's not looking good for Pop. And not everybody lasts forever, you know. You know, everybody's time ends, and I think this is the end for Pop. I just can't see them keeping him. I mean, we had a guy named Hugh Campbell.
Come on now.
We had a guy named Hugh Campbell.
You can't
in
do
Edmonton.
That.
Well, we had a guy named Hugh Campbell in Edmonton, and eventually he called it a day. You know,
yeah, but he retired. It wasn't like Edmonton.
Yeah, I get that, but you know what? Sometimes people get burnt out. You don't think Pop is burnt out making bad decisions based on the fact that, for whatever reason, he's making bad decisions either at the player end or at the coaching end? I mean, who's responsible
not really.
For assembling coaching staff? Is it just the head coach?
Well, I mean, listen, you go back, the coach was the owner's fault, right? I mean, Jim Pop didn't want to hire Tom Higgins. The coach stepped in and the owner stepped in and made that decision. Pop wanted to actually coach the season. And it was Tom Higgins who decided to hire that crazy offensive coordinator they had, the guy they fired after he showed up with a beer in the meeting room. And so it's sort of been like a domino effect, starting from the owner, working his way down. The only thing Jim Pop is responsible for is he hasn't found a quarterback. That's it. He still has a great defense. He's got a great group of receivers. He's got a good group of running backs. He just has an old offensive line that he hasn't replaced with young talent, and he hasn't found a QB. Other than that, he's done a great job. And if you look back, he's been the GM there since 96. And they've been a playoff team, I think, every year except one. That's incredible.
It's incredible because, and you know, but you got to remember, you've got to be consistent, Manasseh. The East has been a horrible division by your own definition in the past 20 years.
Right, but I mean, Montreal was still racking up like 12, 13 wins a year, and they were beating Western teams. They were just the only East team that had it together.
I get that. I get that. I truly get that. But you know, they're easy pickings. It's like this year, if one of the CFL teams in the East were average teams, they'd be way ahead of the pack. And we're going to find out which team's above average or around average, because they're going to take off in the Eastern Division. They're playing each other now. We're going to find out. We're going to separate, the wheat from the chaff, to use a farming term.
If I could just add on the whole East-West dynamic, the reason there's a disparity, it has to go back to this new TV deal and the fact that teams in the West spend way more money on scouting, on talent evaluation, on player personnel. I mean, they're like, you know, their budgets are like 3-4 times bigger than the Eastern teams. It's really...
And the Eastern teams are spending it on survival.
Basically, yep. That's really what it is. And so that's why. You can't compare East versus West. You can just compare them within their divisions. And as it stands, Montreal still, they're right there with Toronto. I mean, Toronto's, what, 3-8?
Mm-hmm.
3-7, what's the record?
The 3-7. Well, Week 10.
3-7, no, there you go. And they're in Montreal, 2-7. So
3-6.
I mean,
no, 3-6. 3-6.
3-6 there.
I think the 3-6. They missed one game, week 10. Oh, yeah, but
no,
they played twice in 1 week. Yeah, they played twice in 1 week. Yeah, so 3-7.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, Montreal could still end up hosting the Eastern Final, and, you know, what a little...
For sure.
Say then.
No team is a lock to make the playoffs in the East by virtue
still
of
not.
The lack of... You know, at this point, nobody, you know, Hamilton looks like, I don't like today, they didn't look like that dominating to me. You know, and Montreal has their issues, and Ottawa has, of course, their issues. I mean, the playoffs are there for two teams to grab in the East. They just have to be mediocre. If they rise to mediocrity, they'll finish first and second. That's all it takes in the East. And the hope that people like me have, who are like I as an Argo fan and Bruce John Inch as a Ticat fan, we're going to hope that our teams do what some teams have done. They play real horrible at the beginning of the year and then build a little run like the Argos did in 2012. You know, when you think about it, if it wasn't for the five-game run that, was it a five or a six-game run that Toronto in 2012 did, they wouldn't have won the Grey Cup. They wouldn't have been in the playoffs.
Well, you know, I hope that they had David Brailey as their owner too. Let's not
I don't want to get into
that
part.
Rub that in again, Frank.
What's that?
Rub that in again, Frank. Yeah.
What am I rubbing in?
To Toronto.
No. That's not what I was doing, and you know that's not what I was doing.
I know, but I've heard
the point
that
I'm
so
trying to make is
me.
That if you can turn things around, whether it's because you have Brailey as an owner. Blah, blah, and all that stuff, to use a Schmidt term. What matters is get your house in order, get on a roll, and in the CFL you can win the Grey Cup no matter how you finish, as long as you make the playoffs. That's all I'm saying. Whether
Calgary,
it's because of Brailey Manasse, whether it's because of conspiracy, he's not here.
I'm just joking.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm just saying. The CFL is such a small league. There's only 9 teams, you know. It's the odds on winning are good for you. You know, your odds are more than 1 in 10.
Yeah.
I mean, you have 30 teams.
So, Frank, let me ask you, as an Argo fan, are you worried that this may be the end for Owens and Dury? I think it's starting to look like their careers might be coming to an end here pretty soon.
I'm not so worried about Dury, and I'm concerned about Owens. But my biggest concern, my biggest concern is Ricky Ray. This is a guy that I'm seeing doing his best to carry a team that's too heavy, and that weighs on a guy. You know, at his age, you know, I'm old too, and sometimes us old people like to surround ourselves with, you know, the people who can do the heavy lifting, physically speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to count on Ricky Ray to scramble like he did today, well,
yeah.
Well, how long is he going to last, you know?
So that leads me into my next question for you, which is if Owens and Dury keep showing this ability not to stay on the field and keep getting hurt, and let's remember they're both, I believe, in their mid-30s now.
Right.
Both of them are getting paid top dollar at their positions. Would you be okay if Jim Barker decided to release both of them in order to spend some more money in free agency to reload the offense?
Hey, listen. Someone once said to me, I have loyalty to the players, but someone once said to me, we cheer for the laundry. And there's some truth to that. You know, we cheer for the jersey. We don't really cheer for the player that's in there. Our loyalty is to winning as fans. That's what we want from our team. And we may be upset when they release a player or put a player out to pasture, like we were talking about Lewis earlier. We may not be happy with putting him out to pasture, but if the guy they bring in plays better than him, we'll forget about him real quick.
That's the same thing I said about...
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was saying that's the same thing I was talking about with Fred Stemps. I mean, hey, if the guy's not putting out and he's not playing, I mean, you know, I'm thinking, I know Fred Stemps make a lot of money over there in Edmonton, man. So, you know, you can cut that dude and bring an up-and-comer that'll take his place, and you forget all about him. Because once they get up in their mid-30s, man, they count on their tailspin of their career anyway. With all these injuries and stuff, I agree with Manasseh, man. I think at the end of the season, I'm not worried about Dury. But Chad, I think Chad would be gone, man. It's about that time, especially if
we can't play. We got a few games left, and if Chad struggles health-wise for the rest of the season, it'll be a no-brainer. If Dury suffers for the rest of the season due to physical inability to play, he could become an issue. And if they don't straighten this out, they're going to put – and I'm not saying they're going to put Ricky Ray on a stretcher, none of this dramatic crap. But at the end of the day, the more hits a quarterback takes, you know, the more nagging injuries he ends up with. The more nagging injuries he ends up with, you know, he's wearing a knee brace right now, you know, and it's his lead foot. And Ricky's favorite stance is he plants his lead foot. And I think that's his biggest problem is that – you know, he's not as healthy as he should be. And you can't be healthy if Ricky Ray, this season I've seen, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, he's running too much. And I don't mind Ricky running. I just don't think that's the game. That's the plan. That's the game plan that the Argos want. They don't want Ricky getting first downs. They want Ricky throwing for first downs, not running for them. He's not Riley.
Frank, I told you that at the beginning of the season, and I said there's just something wrong with Ricky Ray, right? I don't know if you remember that or not, but, you know, I said there's something wrong with him, and he's just not he's not Ricky Ray.
He's not his normal self.
It's called the Argos offensive line sucks. That's what's for the Ricky Ray's problem.
You know,
he's a classic pocket passer that needs, you know, 3 seconds, 4 seconds to clean. You know, without getting guys in his face, and the Argos, you know, their offense sucks, man. That's what happens. They're a cheap team that put all this money on the front end, initially with Kacker, Owens, Dury, with Ricky Ray. They tied in all that money into those guys, and it's killing them on their back end. They don't have the depth.
I get blamed for this all the time. How did we end up back in the Argos? We're supposed to be talking about Ottawa, Montreal.
Are we done talking about Ottawa, Montreal?
Is Ottawa, Montreal that game so boring that we're not willing even to talk about it?
Frank,
I got
the
all
whole
the mics open.
With the exception of Winnipeg against Saskatchewan, every other game sucked this weekend.
I can't deny that.
No, Calgary won, but the game itself,
yeah,
like,
I know,
you know,
they won, but it still was a good game, though.
I'd rather see close games like today with the Argos and Hamilton. And then a blowout any day. This kept, you know, the fans were on their seat. You were in the stadium, Manasseh, but the fans were on the edge of their seats all game, man. It was, it's a lot better in person than it is watching it on TV. Because when you're watching it on TV, the camera's facing one way only the whole time, you know. when you're there, you can look around, you can get into it, man. You know, our
right.
defense,
Jackson,
man. When our
crowd.
Defense was on the field, man, we were all, and especially in that fourth quarter, we were all on our feet, just yelling our heads off, man. It was, it was.
And unfortunately, you know, when you have teams like the Montreal Alouettes and the Ottawa Red Blacks, whose defenses are their primary form of success, it doesn't make for exciting football. So we've all had a chance to talk about Ottawa and Montreal. Let's move on. We're down to the final hour here to Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. What I think many of us will agree, probably the best game to have been played as far as, you know, what we commonly expect from the CFL, touchdown, scoring, defense. You know, Calgary won 28-13. Great. But Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, they have offenses. And we'll start at the top now with Kelly Bale, who is a Saskatchewan fan. And Kelly, you know, that's the kind of football that we're missing this year. It seems that in the CFL this year, we're lacking what used to be the strength, and that's offense. Quarterbacks.
Right. Absolutely. It's been a defensive year so far, and a lot of comparisons to NFL scores, and, you know, everybody calls it the no-fun league. Well, that's because of the scores. And, you know, the CFL has done many things over the years, even going back to the origins of the game, to promote offense. And, you know, the larger end zones, no fair catch, you know what I mean? Like, these types
of things.
The five-yard
rule, baby.
Exactly.
All you get is 5 yards.
The rouge is another thing where we've promoted offense in this game for years and years and years, and this year we're just not seeing it. Now, I don't know if it's a symptom of anything, but, you know, that Saskatchewan-Winnipeg game was definitely the most entertaining game of the season yet for me, but I'm just wondering if other fans feel the same way. But it has been talked about in the Facebook groups and on the CFL site as, you know, kind of flagship game of the season so far. For me, I would have to agree. And it was fun watching it. Right team came out on top. My prediction was off. I did predict Saskatchewan to win this week, but didn't pick the score. I thought, you know, having all three running backs activated was interesting.
That was scary.
Well,
that pisses me off.
Scary.
I am irritated by that.
Yeah, it's scary for you know, the other team. They have to game plan for three different styles of running. That's not as big as a factor as they can rotate these guys, and they're fresher in the fourth quarter as a result of it.
But how can they afford to have that many Class A running backs? Because they have three quarterbacks. They have three running backs that I would love to have any of them. I'd love to have Messam in the backfield in Toronto.
Right, but, you know, just because you'd love to have him doesn't, you know, make it wrong for the Saskatchewan to employ three guys or unaffordable. And, you know, one thing we have to establish, I heard you talking about it a bit earlier, too, the salary cap stuff with Saskatchewan, is we don't care. We will do what it takes to win a championship. You know, you can love us or hate us for it, but, you know, I think...
No, it's not about love or hate. It's not about love or hate. It's simple addition. Okay, it's simple addition. You know,
hey,
it doesn't
Kelly
add
Kukaki
up.
With his, is now.
What's that?
We'll spend what we want to spend. We don't. I we
say,
don't.
I say Kelly's getting kind of cocky with his riders now.
Just a little.
They should be.
I'm just talking about. I'm just talking about the way it has been and the riders. What the riders have shown. Like, this is a poker game, guys, and we're trying to figure out what kind of cards they're holding. Well,
right.
They've shown their hand. Like, they don't care. And we have to establish that and stop talking about this as some big issue that the riders are worried about.
It's not a big issue. Again, I ask the question just the way, don't take it as in, there's no inference. There's no side issue I'm bringing up. I just find it amazing that they have three quality, they can afford to have three quality running backs like that when a lot of teams can't afford one of them.
Well, Minnesota,
or don't have
easy,
one of them.
That's easy to
Let
explain.
Let me rephrase.
If I get
don't
a chance,
have one of them.
Right,
yeah,
it's because the Riders don't have as many expensive players as you think they do. First
yeah.
of all, Durant's only game in the 200K market. Imagine Toronto's paying Ray 400K, the Lions are paying Lule 400K. Look around the league, teams are overpaying for a lot of their quarterbacks, not just their starters, but their backups. The Riders are saving money there. The Riders
yep.
have put all their money in their offensive line. They paid
yep.
John Chick a ton of money, and that's basically it. Most of the rest of these guys are on either rookie deals or on pretty small contracts for where they're at. And Brandon Taman, to me, is the best GM in the league because he's absolute genius with really getting the most out of players and only putting his money in certain spots to make the other guys look
overspending.
Better.
And that was the question
right.
that I was asking. And that's
and
the
that
question.
Was,
it wasn't
right.
a shot.
That's why their running backs are cheap. I mean, Will Ford, Anthony Allen, Jerome Messam, all three of those guys, nobody else wanted them. Allen is first year, Ford. They're all cheap. They're only good because their offensive line is great. You look
right.
at their defense, they paid John Chick $200K, and now their whole defense looks phenomenal because of him. That's how smart he is. That's brilliant on his part. It's not like the Riders are overpaying anybody. They're doing the same
right.
thing as everyone else. They just do it in a smarter way. So,
well, I just wanted to hear an opinion, and that's what I want. And you know, it sounds better when I ask the question and somebody else answers it.
Now, I'm going to tell you guys about Allen, man. The way they found Allen because he went to college in Oklahoma, some little small school. But Allen came up there to the Riders free agent tryout in Detroit, Michigan when they had it here. And they liked
yep.
him so much, they brought him in a training camp and he made the team. He is the cheapest running back out of all of them that they have on the roster.
Yeah, exactly.
In total, that triumvirate has... It's been speculated that triumvirate is making about $200,000.
All
together? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah. That's cheap.
And,
yeah,
and that goes
cheap.
To what Manasseh's saying. That's what makes Taman so brilliant and
yep.
and ticks people like me off.
No, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Yeah,
it's just their old line, Frank. Don't let it bug you. I mean, if you put Curtis Steele and Steve Slayton in Saskatchewan, those guys would be running for like 1,500 yards a season.
Dominant.
It's just
yes.
because, you know, the Riders' offensive line, they're just too good. You could all of us could get behind them and probably at least get 50 yards in a game. Honestly, I'm not even kidding.
But that's
any
the
one of us could go out there and run
that I'm
goals.
Asking on behalf of the fans because it doesn't matter which team you root for. You know, we as a league, how many teams like look at Winnipeg who came out of the gate with a running back Rigsby that was just incredible. That he was churning up yards and. You know, he had a bad week and still was leading the league. We see that kind of stuff all the time. But the consistent way the Riders run, whether, you know, we've got a retired player who's not coming back, you know, to Saskatchewan, a guy that basically ran amok in the CFL and did a great job in their Grey Cup win in Saskatchewan. They're able now to bring Dressler back. And still have quality running backs, and it keeps I keep seeing and believing that Brandon Taman is the best GM in the CFL, and a lot of the flack that team's been getting is because you know that he has been very successful in spending. You know, he's been penny wise pound. You know, he hasn't been penny wise pound foolish. He's avoided the pound crap. And he's done a masterful mm-hmm. job, and many people are jealous of what Saskatchewan has accomplished, granted. But also, before people think I'm putting the hammer down on everybody except Saskatchewan, some Saskatchewan fans are obnoxious about, you know, the embarrassment of riches that they have. And that is just the way sports works. You know, if you win, you get to brag. If you lose, you look for excuses or you hide somewhere. So
yep.
I'm looking
at don't you all guys, don't all of you guys kind of like having the Riders at the top? Like, I feel like the CFL is not right if they're not playing at a high level.
Well, Manasseh,
like
you're 100% right. You're 100% right, and here's why. I would rather have Saskatchewan at the top. Like, if I had to get rid of something, it's not Saskatchewan at the top. It's the East at the bottom.
Yep.
Like, in what way? I don't understand. What do you mean?
Oh, very simple.
You want to get rid of them?
It's the failure. No. And let's be honest, guys. If you really care about a league, a sport, it's not the good people you want to get rid of. It's the bad people. You know, what makes the league horrible this year, if we were to say, okay, here's what's wrong with the CFL this year. It isn't that Saskatchewan will run away with the league. It isn't that Calgary will be 8-1. It isn't that Edmonton's having a fantastic season. It isn't that the West is dominating the East. It's the fact that the East is being dominated. That's the negative. That's the negative. That's the point I'm making. And when there isn't, you know, it isn't about which team is way ahead of everybody else. It's about the teams that are too far behind. That's what makes a league, you know, less compelling, if I can use that term.
Don't you think it would kind of go the other way around, where, like, let's say the CFL had a one-division format and it was just 1-9, and we just ranked it out like that. Think about everyone in the East would have no hope. But the fact that we have this two-division setup, even Ottawa right now at 1-8 or 1-9 still has a chance to make the playoffs. That's great. No other league can say that, where they have their worst team and the league still has
100%,
hope.
Otherwise, you're 100% right. Manasseh, but the people who defend the East-West thing like to think, I think, this is my opinion, I don't know this for a fact, they like to say it's a cycle. You know, oh, this is just a downtrend for the East. But it's a downtrend that's been going on for 20 years.
But, you know, East still wins Grey Cups, right? I mean, the Argos won it, and Montreal had a good run there.
I've always said, that's why I laugh when people say, let's hope that we play the East, we get the crossover, because it'll be an easy route to the Grey Cup. That's why the East wins Grey Cups. But that's what I'm just saying, that's why the East wins Grey Cups, because they don't get taken seriously, you know, or seriously enough.
Okay, well, for us, though, because at least we know the teams, let's be honest, the only reason Hamilton and Toronto are struggling is because of injuries. We know if Toronto has all their weapons, they're at the top of the league with anybody else, and so is Hamilton.
That's my belief. You know? But some people say, well, everybody has injuries, and how come the other teams that have injuries aren't suffering?
Oh, not like that. I mean, imagine if the Riders lost, you know, their one of their Brandon Labatt and another key player and two of their key offensive linemen and John Chick went down.
If Chick goes down, they'd
be like 3-6 right now.
Well, look what happened last year.
They lost Darian Durant.
Who did Calgary lose?
No, if they lost Darian Durant, I think they'd still be 7-2. I don't think that makes a difference, to be honest.
Who did Calgary lose? Like, and they're 8-1. So you know what? Either you
John
step
Cornish.
Up the plate or get the Schmidt out of the house.
John Cornish.
Okay, let's not start with Calgary because Calgary is an aberration. Okay, they're not reality.
No, but
to your point, Manasseh,
they lost John Cornish. But if you have a line, if you have an offensive line, you don't miss John Cornish as much. I think we established that in our conversation already. If Steele was running in Saskatchewan, he'd be doing much better. Slayton in Saskatchewan would be doing much better. If the offensive line isn't making openings for the running back, running back can't run through people all the time.
And it's sort of like Saskatchewan hit the lottery being where they're from, right? Because if you look around the league, the best Canadian offensive linemen, the majority of them are from Saskatchewan or from the prairies in general, so they all want to come back and play for the Riders.
Play at home.
For years. It was Makowski and Jeremy O'Day, and you can go through the history. They've had this long run of great local boys who happen to be fantastic offensive linemen and would stay in Regina for their whole career, and that's why they always had a dominant offensive line.
Well, you know, the common man can understand something, I think. We, common fans, can understand why a player would rather play at home, you know, because they don't make that much money in the CFL. There are a lot of people that earn a lot of people in the stands that earn more money than the players on the field. There are a lot of people who earn more money than the players on the field. And for us to set up shop or a home, you know, most of us want to stay where where we live. We don't want to move. And why don't we want to move? Because it's an expensive adventure to move. These are human beings with, the same kind of constraints that we have. You know, they don't get a free ride. They got to pay for everything. And it's expensive to live elsewhere, especially if you still want to live where you originally are from. That's the same reason why not everybody has a cottage. To simplify it for everyone, that's why not everybody has a cottage, because not everybody can afford that second dwelling, unless you're a senator, because then you don't have to even live where you say you live. That's another story.
Or Ford from Toronto. From there. But anyways, that's a different story.
You know, I hate to sound like I'm preaching, but really, I have sympathy for these guys. And the guys that can play at home. You know, the guys, and Manasseh's 100% right. If you can convince players, well, look at BC. Look at BC. One of the great running backs of the league, Andrew Harris. Local boy. You know, local.
Yeah.
You get to play at home.
The skill positions too, Manasseh. We got Chris Getzlaff, Jason Claremont, Chris Bauman, Jordan Sisko, tons of receivers from Saskatchewan. What's his name on Manitoba there? Rory Kohler. He's from Regina. You know, and then we got running backs galore like Stu Ford and Neil Hughes, and you know, several of the Rider running backs over the years have been local boys. Brad Elberg is one of my favorites going way back. Anyway, yeah. Regina, you're right, Frank. Regina has produced a heck of a lot of talent, and it's thanks to, you know, a great man who's retiring after the end of this season, and his name is Frank McChrystal. He's been the steward of the Regina Rams for about 30 years, and, you know, his tenure's coming to an end. So be interesting to see who fills his role and steps in and whether they can continue their Can West dominance and, you know, just the rich tradition of the Regina Rams.
You know, the popularity of football in Saskatchewan will always, as long as the popularity of the game is what it is, they will continue to produce great football players. That's a motivation, man. I mean, nothing motivates somebody more than appreciation. And let's face it, in Saskatchewan, they appreciate good football. And that's an advantage they have over a lot of other communities, you know, in the CFL. We have some
because they got a lot of big country boys, you know. It's all the farmers
that
and all
too,
that.
You know,
that's where they get the old linemen from.
That's right. Well, you know, it is what it is, right? I mean, you know, there are lots of places that churn out talent. You know, we've got in Quebec, you know, in Quebec there are a lot of talented players coming out of Quebec. You know, University of Western Ontario, you know, McMaster, you know, these places produce players all the time. What I'm hoping someday is maybe that Ticats and the Argos will be able to have some territorial players that they'll be able to keep, like BC gets, you know, that and like Saskatchewan gets. A lot of Ontario boys are playing everywhere, as opposed to the best Ontario boys playing in Ontario. I'm hoping that'll happen. That'll help our teams a little bit as well. It's important in the CFL. The smartest thing that CFL GMs can do is look for the local guys, because the local guys want to stay home. Most people, that's what they want to do. They want to play in front of their family and friends. It's what they want to do. You know, it's not all about money all the time. I don't think, anyway. Again, that's just my opinion, but I like to think that it's based on having spoken to a few football players and getting the distinct impression that they love to be at home, and the reality of how much they get paid sometimes makes it easier to play at home.
Right. Like Andy Fentz, who's leaving the Riders to go to the Ticats.
There you go.
Yep.
You know?
I agree with you, Frank, is because, you know what, it comes down to what I've said on Facebook and CFL sites on the page there, is that, you know what, you play for your team, you play for your heart, you play for your city, you play for your family, you play for your kids. I mean, but just play for that city that you're playing for, and you love the city, then stay there. Don't go anywhere else.
Well, the desire to leave, as long as, you know, there's the unfortunate circumstance that, you know, the local team doesn't want you or need you. And I think need you is the biggest problem. Because not everybody from Saskatchewan can play in Saskatchewan. You know, some of them have to play elsewhere. The point is, when you have a great GM like Taman, he knows which ones to keep locally. And I think he's the greatest difference that in the CFL today. He is the best GM in the CFL today.
You have to also recognize, Frank, that we've had two or three good ones in a row. A lot of people might not like Roy Shivers, but he was a big part of this organization process. And, you know,
how about Ford?
Had,
is he good?
Well, you had Eric Tillman in Jim Hobson's territory, and that's what I want to talk about is the man behind the man is really Jim Hobson. And, I mean, he's hired all three of, you know, DMs that helped us, you know, on to bigger and better things, got the marketing going. Got
totally
really
correct.
Fixed. Yeah.
That's
so
part of the process. You're right. That's part of the process. I mean, winners pick winners. Winners surround themselves with winners. Losers, teams that lose, they're like a basket of bad fruit. You know, you can see what, you know, that's all. Losers are like a basket of bad fruit. And that's why I keep pointing at, and I'm sorry, Manasseh, but I keep pointing to Pop. And not because he doesn't have the ability to win. It's been taken away from him. The owner broke a cardinal rule. A cardinal rule. You don't make decisions that the GM should make. End of story. As soon as you do that, you undermine him. And now anything he has to say is not taken, you know, as gospel. And that's,
well, that's
what's wrong with ownership.
You got to understand that Wen Hall did that because of the Dan Hawkins thing the year before. That was
Jim
Hawkins' fault.
That.
And because of that,
I get that.
He has to be he has to pay for Hawkins' contract the next 2 years, plus the next coach. So it's his money, kind of. So he was like, if I'm going to spend it, I'm going to make the choice this time. That's what his rationale was.
But it's like divorce, right? Eventually, some divorces end up happening because of people cheating. Well, there's a reason why they cheat. You know, like cause and effect. You know, it just is what it is. You know, once you poison the well, it doesn't matter who poisoned it. The well's poisoned in Montreal.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that Pop is a terrible GM. I'm just thinking his time is over in Montreal. He can't accomplish what... Like, he's not getting the say that he wants. You said it yourself. He wanted to coach the team. He's told no. The owner said no, you're not to. In fact, I'm going to hire the guy. How can that be good? I don't know. Not in my world. Not in my world.
So if Jim Pop were to all of a sudden leave Montreal, would you be happy if he came to Toronto and became
the new
GM?
Truth? You want the truth for me? Right now, the way the Argos are playing right now, I'd look at it as a step up. The good feeling to have made some decisions that he has to pay for. You know, is it the coach that's the problem? There are a lot of people who are, there are, you know, Argo fans, there aren't that many, and we're not that loud, you know. But I can tell you this. People are losing their patience with Milanovic, not because Milanovic is doing a bad job, because we really don't know if he's doing a bad job, but the team sucks. And if the team sucks, somebody's got to go. Something's wrong. Something's got to change. So if you tell me that Pop comes here and Pop has the ability to make the decisions for himself, absolutely. I know he's a good mind. I just think the well's been poisoned in Montreal. The owner can't say to Pop ever again. He can never say to Pop again, you have the final say on this team. If you're Pop, would you believe that? And if you're anybody Pop hired, would you believe that?
Nope. Actually, they're going to have to clean house in Montreal, to be honest with you. They're going to have to clean
house.
I was going to say that after this season. They have to... You know, it's not going anywhere, and it's sad, but yeah.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with
that. Do you think they should do as Ottawa's doing and just start cutting all the veterans and just play all the young guys and just start playing for the future?
Well, that's a smart move in itself, to a degree.
You could, but then certain veterans you need to keep on your team that's going to help you at least win a couple of more games. Not going to say all
rebuild.
Of them, but some
rebuild.
Of
I don't think in rebuilding, the rebuilding process, I don't think winning enters into it. I think that's Manasseh's question. Do you allow yourself to go with who you see in your future, talent-wise, as far as young players are concerned, and do you use them to grow their experience and give them the opportunity to fail so that down the road they're more successful? To answer your question, Manasseh, I'm 100% okay, because you know what? The teams that sink mm-hmm. right bounce back really fast.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep.
I agree.
Like Jim Barker, like he that was a great move on his part in this year's draft to trade up and get Anthony Coombs. He's like Andre Dury's replacement. If you look
at it, absolutely,
that's what they. So that's.
We lost Manasseh there for a second. It appears we've lost him for more than a second.
Lose me too, Frank?
No, you're there.
Okay, good.
Hey, I want to say something real quick on something that we touched.
Feel free.
Last year, and this is what I was talking about with the, and I don't mean to bring this league in, but it's just something I want to bring to you.
Yes, you do.
You know, we about the Josh Gordon fiasco. Now, how they suspended him for a year. But did y'all hear about the Indianapolis Colts owner?
Yep. Go ahead.
It wasn't done said about suspending him or taking something away from him for the season or something like that, or no punishable offenses. It wasn't done said. Because I think I posted it on Facebook. Put your name on it so you can read it.
The only argument to that, Mike, is that the players – collective bargaining, they agree to the drug policy. They sign off on it, all the players. So
that's it.
When you sign off on something, there's not much recourse you can take.
And when you give the latitude to somebody to make the decision to tail on to hop on Kelly's bandwagon there, once you agree to terms. How those terms are exercised is out of your control.
Yeah.
Right. I understand that, but you're the owner of the team and you got caught with drugs.
He's not punishable by the same authority. He didn't sign.
Yeah, but
contract.
You know, Kelly, to side here with Mike for the reasons that I think are fair, for fair reasons, and it is only fair. Just because the players agreed to be punished doesn't mean the owners can't be punished, to Mike's point.
For sure.
Right?
He's got the
lot. Now,
that's my point.
And you're 100% right, Mike. He needs to be taken to task. And as an owner of a team, it's just hard. It's hard to tell the people who make the rules to have them punish each other. It's just hard to do that. It's the reality of, the only reason the NBA got away with what they did is because of the backlash. Let's face it, the racial backlash, because it was racially established. It was established that there was racial prejudice going on, which is unacceptable for those of us that may not be black or African American or African Canadian. Passengers on the "we want to do the right thing" train. The right thing train should also exist with this owner. If he's doing drugs or if he's caught with drugs, he should be punished the same way the players are, in my opinion. But can
right.
you convince the other owners to do that? That's the problem.
And yes. I brought that up because when after Roger Goodell didn't he suspended Josh Gordon for the year, he came up with some type of rule saying if any NFL personnel that's employed by the NFL, they fall under the same category as a player. So
unless they're his boss. Unless they're his boss.
He's not employed by the NFL.
Guy,
that's the only problem.
Yeah. The one guy that doesn't fall under that is the owner, unfortunately. But I agree
with you,
Mike and Frank, that there should be something done about this guy. And the other thing I agree with is that man, we are in some racially tense times right now, and this is just awful. It's just a step backward. It's terrible to see, isn't it, guys?
But yeah, with what? Oh, the Missouri thing?
Oh, God, and everything. I mean, just everything that's been going on lately. I mean, Trayvon Martin, you know.
It's not that bad, Kelly. That's just don't let the media fool you. It's
and I agree
with just talk to somebody who was alive, like, during the 40s and 50s and ask them. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's
I was
night
alive
and day.
In the 50s.
You're,
you
you're talking to Frank, so there you go.
All right,
you
there
could
you
ask
so Frank,
me, and
no.
I, no, no, you, they, guys, listen. I grew up loving Martin Luther King. People here in Canada don't understand racism because, you know, being called names is one thing, but having a sign on a door that says you don't get to use this washroom, you go to the back.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about. You know, we're not talking about a, I mean, it happens in Canada. It happened in Canada, the eastern part of Canada, you know, and you know, look, what's
Frank,
going on today.
Let me just say it for you, because I know you probably, because it'll be difficult saying it from a white person's perspective.
Yeah.
But what's going on in America, especially in Missouri, it has nothing to do with white people. It has everything to do with black people and their mentality. What you have today are blacks that have a victim persecuted mentality when it's not the reality. You know what I'm saying? And they overreact to these little minor incidents and try to make it seem like it can justify, like, well, what justifies everybody looting?
I wouldn't call it a minor incident. But what I would,
I mean, in the sense that now they're going out and using that incident to justify going into all these stores and stealing from everybody. Like, that just shows you they're, number one, they're being opportunistic, and they're not, and they're just playing the race
all over again. It's the Rodney
King.
Yeah,
still
Rodney King, yeah.
I mean, like, because my family, I have a bunch of family that are police officers, both in Winnipeg and here in Minnesota. And I'm telling you, the reality of the situation is any cop who works in an inner-city neighborhood, especially in a large African-American or Latin, you know, neighborhood, you're dealing with such a high-stress job with so much constant danger to your life that situations come up where you just overreact, and that just comes with the job. And what you end up having is blacks are saying these things, but they're doing all the violent crimes, all the drugs, all the stuff. They're the number one threat to the cops. And I'm saying this as a black person, as a family, as cops, and I'm saying this from my own brother was a drug dealer, so I'm telling it from both sides. And I'm telling you, they're bringing it on themselves, and then they're trying to turn around and complain when they're the ones fulfilling the very stereotypes that they're upset that people keep labeling them as. And they don't realize the change starts with them.
And how this ends
That's
up
it.
In sports, and how it bleeds in, because we need to leave that commentary there, and how it bleeds into sports is simply this, is that sports, athletes, unions of athletes, leagues, are a microcosm of society. You know, and unfortunately, the glass, the looking glass that we look through when we look at athletes is a lot different than the regular looking glass. So let's keep it in perspective here. As far as athletes are concerned, they're in a whole different world. A black athlete is in a whole different world than a black human being in a depressed community. For example, in some of the tough places that Detroit have right now, that I'm raising that for a reason, because I don't want to sound like an expert here. I want to rely on people who understand exactly the way it works. Where you live, Mike, where poverty exists, there's a higher rate of crime. Where poverty exists, more people feel that they need to take because they can't earn. And that's the way life
and
works.
And that's BS, man. That's total BS. In America, no one in the United States of America should be able
to say
that.
I don't want to get into politics here and societal things, but the fact remains, a lot of players that come from, places where the only way out is through sports. A lot of those people who come out of those places,
Frank, come on, you can't say
have,
like that doesn't
finish,
exist.
Let me finish.
There's no place in the U.S.
They
where
have
you can
what
only,
you're talking
only ways
about.
Out of sports.
They have what you're talking about. They can't leave the criminal acceptance that they have, because that's what you're referring to. You're referring to, for example, the New England Patriots. who loves waving a gun and now is accused of killing people. Sometimes no amount of money is going to change who you are. And the NFL has a battle where they have to figure out who are the guys that they don't want representing them, right? But they also have a responsibility to understand that some people who come from those places want to change, want to be better, want to move on. And they deserve a chance to move on and not be hung up on, like, what you're saying, Manasseh. And you're stereotyping, and it's not fair. There are a lot of people who are white who come from poor, poverty families who have difficulty working their way into regular society. And I hate to sound like a do-gooder or, you know, a Martin Luther King type or a John Kennedy type or a Robert Kennedy type, but I believe in what they had to say. Everybody deserves a chance. But where I agree with Manasseh, you got to keep the antennas up for the people who are just using your generosity, kindness, and compassion to their advantage. And Manasseh is right. There are some people in this world who take advantage of our compassion and decency. And the NFL has a responsibility, and sports leagues have a responsibility, to treat players as human beings first.
Right. But it's two problems, Frank, and you know what it is. I mean, on the sports side, their thing is forget character. They want the best athletes. And unfortunately, the best athletes always come from minority neighborhoods, preferably black.
And what does that feed, Manasseh? And what does that feed? Well, it feeds the stuff you were talking about. It gives people the impression that they'll accept me as I am. I believe I want to be a gangster inside my head. And they'll accept
my
gangster
self.
The whole
problem is it's within black people themselves. Because all you got to do is, like, go on YouTube and look up Bill Cosby. And he talks about this all the time.
I love Bill Cosby.
Yeah, and it's an in-house issue where black people forgot the old mentality.
But if Bill Cosby
you bring up Martin Luther King said it perfect. He said, don't judge a person by their skin, judge a person by their character.
Exactly.
And what black people forgot is about the character part. And the character part means
having
working hard and taking
care
of yourself.
It sounds
kind
of weird that I as a white guy, am defending the black community.
Need to be defended. They've been. You see, the thing is what you're instead of racism,
white
people are doing this condescension thing where they're sort of enabling their weakness, like they're not like everybody else.
Understood.
No, the reason I brought that up because it was coming. The next question I have with him being an NFL owner, do y'all think the NFL should punish that man by some type of circumstance?
They should punish him. They should punish him.
But what
they
are they
going
to do to him though? Like, they can't do anything to him. They can't suspend him because he doesn't really take part in anything.
The NBA
can't do that.
At least give him a wedgie or something.
Oh, they can't do it. I mean, Goodell can't. It's like, imagine one of you guys trying to punish your boss for something he did wrong. Like, he got caught in the office screwing his secretary or something.
It wouldn't be punishing.
You can't turn around and try to fine the guy. He's paying your salaries.
Nobody is beyond being accountable. Nobody, Manasseh. That's why Richard Nixon was ushered into a helicopter and sent away.
Richard Nixon was a servant to the public. He's a government official. But when you're a private owner,
I think
and you're the one
powerful,
that's writing the checks,
like
you can't be told
powerful?
To... No, but it's a public job, though, Frank. He's getting paid by us, so he's accountable to the public.
You know what it always comes down to, Manasseh? Money. You know, the reason why they forced him to sell the team is because of money. The advertisers got upset. The advertisers started doing stuff. And that's what's going to happen again. That's what's going to happen. It may not happen as loud and as obvious, but the advertisers are going to start going, you know, a lot of people that we care about how they think don't like what's going on here. Fix it.
But
the
it's
NFL,
football, man.
It's not,
nobody in the NFL cares.
Yeah,
I'm not too sure.
To find owners, and like Manasseh says, it's, you know, that's just not their jurisdiction. It'd be contradictory to... you know, the hierarchy there. But what the NFL can do is they can impose almost like sanctions, you know what I mean, where this owner cannot do this again or he violates the new collective bargaining agreement that we have.
Well, exactly. And what you're talking about is you're talking about a communication between the between the members of the board, if you will. Because, you know, within every group, within every group of people, there are good and bad apples. And I'm sure in the ownership in the NFL and every other league, there's guys that go, you know what, and we brag about, you know, Brayley, about him being a decent guy. You know, he left the Senate because he didn't like what was going on in the Senate. And there's going to be guys like that in the NFL, you know, who take a lot of pride of being good citizens, who spend a lot of money on charity, and who like, you know, spreading the goodwill and like their name, you know, associated with good, not bad. And now you got a guy who's doing something, you know, it's throwing some Schmidt their way. And nobody likes Schmidt headed their way.
Those are the people that have power against the individual.
And they will be the ones who handle it. It'll all happen behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, because they all have sponsors. They all have people who go, hey, you know what? I mean, let's face it, guys. Money talks and Schmidt walks. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
That's how it works. Like,
that's life.
That's why he's not going anywhere, you know.
He's going to... He's going to be, you know, we're going to hear about him going to, you know, drug rehabilitation. We'll hear about it, you know, and he's going to make an apology.
In the NBA, the Donald Sterling thing to, say, Jim Irsay. It's all about the league. The NBA,
compared
to the NFL, is only so much. And so the NBA has to sell an image, so they had to do it, and they had no choice but to get rid of Sterling. If the same thing happened in the NFL where you had a racist owner coming out and making, you know, recorded him making racist remarks, nothing would have happened because the NFL is just way too big. And the NFL has way too much money to even give two ribs. All the sponsors could leave. It's not going to do anything to the TV money the NFL is getting. That's the whole problem.
I disagree. The main reason why I think the NFL has set itself up to be a personal ownership thing for a reason. They want someone to be accountable. You know, there are no corporations that run a team anywhere. They're all personally owned by persons. And those persons are accountable. Don't kid yourself.
Okay, let's say you were Jim Irsay and you were the one in that situation. Let's say you made a couple mistakes, did some things, got in trouble, right? Now they're coming to you saying you have to sell your team. Now what would you say?
Well, I would say, let's see if you can legally do that first, because my team's worth about $1 billion, so I can afford some pretty good lawyers, and we'll find out where that goes.
Right. But I'm saying, would you be willing to sell the team? Of course you wouldn't.
No,
I imagine.
That's where accountability, that's the definition of accountability. If he doesn't feel he has to sell the team, then he doesn't feel accountable. But then again, what is he accountable for? You know what I mean?
Who?
Yeah,
guys, we know what rich guys do, though, right? Drugs. Like, let's be honest here.
Hang on a second. Money's a drug. I heard money.
Okay,
a drug.
we're not rich, so I'm not doing drugs. So.
Well, it's you know, I've said before and I'll say again, money is not a solution to anything. It just gives you the opportunity to see if you can afford to be happy, you know.
Oh, look at what welfare's done to black people in America. Just throwing money at a problem never solves anything.
No, it doesn't. And it's much better to teach somebody how to earn money than it is to give them money. It's much easier. That's
really
like.
What really pisses me off is. You know, living in Edmonton here and cheering for the Stamps, okay, that's a different story in itself. But anyways, just...
But I like where you're headed. You said the Stamps.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. But anyways, I've had racist remarks about myself being Native and all this kind of stuff, and I just walk by and just give the thumbs up, whatever sort of thing. I don't give the finger. I just give the thumbs up. And you know what? What it comes down to is, you know what? All my friends, I've been in Edmonton for 3.5 years, and all my friends in Edmonton here, which is not too many because most of mine from Calgary, but most of my friends here in Edmonton are Latino. So, you know, like they're... Mexican guacamolean
Whoa.
Or whatever the hell
you
want to call it.
Guatemala.
No,
Guatemala.
Well, I'm not
wow. Guatemala.
I know. I know. I call them guacamoles, but whatever.
Wow.
You know. But
as
this,
a native,
as a native Canadian,
your sensitivity level is set at very, very low. It's set very
I'm
low.
I'm not native.
I thought that's what you said.
Oh, you just look native.
No, I said I looked. They say I look native.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so you're native a white person that gets treated with racism? That's gotta be amazing.
Well, racism plus wearing my Stampeders jersey and stuff like that, so it's a double whammy.
Oh my
but
God!
I just keep on walking by and just keep.
That's just stupid.
You know what?
Take
I don't
step
care
back.
If you're black, white, Chinese, whatever the hell you are, yellow, whatever you are. I don't care. If I like you, I like you. I'm plain and simple. I don't care what color your skin is. Plain and simple.
That's why you sound so depressed all the time, Storm. You're a white person getting discriminated against by other white people.
That makes
you
unique.
I'm a minority here in Canada.
It also makes you unique. It also makes you unique.
Really?
That's
the first time I ever
heard
of a white person being discriminated against by his own race. That's amazing. And wow.
Well, it happened. He's not white enough. He might not be white enough. He doesn't glow in the dark.
My roommate is native, so there you go. So it's
you do have.
And I love her. And I love her dearly because she's my best friend. So there you go.
Well, you know, the whole point. The whole point
with benefits or just you know, strictly
the whole point
cordial.
Of this conversation, Manasseh. The whole point of this conversation, it all started with the guy that left, Mike left, and the point is that leagues and people have one thing in common, and that is there's good people and bad people everywhere. It doesn't matter where you look. In as far as punishment to people, we would hope when it comes to leagues that it's strictly based on the sin, not the sinner, and if that's the case, okay. If it's not, then, you know, we can all question it, and I do believe that in society there are remedies, and you know, but the best remedy is always about affecting someone's bottom line. If you can do that, they'll be better people. If you can affect their bottom line, Sterling going to be a better guy because the team gets sold? No, he's just going to have more money to spend elsewhere, and that's the nice thing about money. You know, you get to take it with you until you die. But the important thing is does Saskatchewan spend more money than everybody else? Well, our friend Kelly Bell says no.
That's full circle, Frank. Nice.
Right? I'm just going
nice
full
segue.
Circle here because
yeah.
I want to take it
yeah.
back to where we're supposed to be talking, and that's about the CFL. And in a way, is that discriminatory against the rest of the teams? If CJ was here, he'd say, yep, that's discriminatory against all the other teams. I say, on the other hand, do the best you can. Be the best you can be. Don't break the rules, because that's not fair. And if you're going to break the rules, the punishment should fit the crime. And if they broke the rules by $1,700 last year, then they should pay $1,700 worth of pain back to the league. So let's not overemphasize what Saskatchewan did. Let's overemphasize the fact that we want our teams to be competitive. I'm more concerned, to take it completely full circle, with the teams that are dragging the back end of the league. Everybody in every league talks about competitiveness and an equal opportunity to win a champ. And in the CFL, right now, this year, it doesn't look like that's the case. We're down to seconds, guys. 15 seconds, Manasseh. 15, 20 seconds. Your final words?
Yeah, I'm happy for Bruce and for Schmidt and for Kelly that their teams won. And they're great fans. They deserve it. So hats off, gentlemen. Have a good night.
How about you, Schmidt?
Yeah, likewise. I'm not happy for Saskatchewan winning, but it was a good game. And, and of course, my Stamps. And I'm happy for Phyllis there for her going for her first game in Hamilton New Stadium.
There you go. And how about you, Kelly?
Same sentiments, basically. Just happy for everyone that won and sorry for everyone that lost. And let's do it all again next week like we do about this time of year, right?
There you go. All right, that concludes our program for tonight, and I'd like to also, on behalf of Mike, mention that he has left the building. I don't think he left voluntarily. I think he might have lost connection. And because of that, he's not on the program anymore to say what I just said. Remember, the program's on Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 to 12 a.m. weekly. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been the Candid Frank Live Show. The CFL is the best football in the world, where we get to talk CFL.